citizens hearing on disclosure. Will we ever get the answers? Well, one person who is there fighting for those answers, Stephen Bassett, and he joins us next in a special two-hour performance here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Stephen Bassett, of course, is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group. He's a leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence. He's a political activist, a lobbyist as well. You know him. He's been on Coast to Coast many, many times. And tonight, we're going to be talking about the full video record of the citizen hearing on disclosure. And now I'm going to let Stephen tell you what has happened to the congressional offices when they were delivered this little present. Stephen, welcome back and Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Yes, George, it's great to be with you again, as always.
Finally, the efforts of your labor are beginning to pay off. Tell me what has happened with the DVD, with Congress.
Yes. On November the 5th, we shipped the full 30-hour record of the citizen hearing on disclosure, which we held at the National Press Club back in April, May 2013, which is when we had 42 witnesses testify for 5 days and 30 hours in a mock hearing, congressional hearing, in the ballroom of the National Press Club to six former members of Congress, five former representatives of the House, and one senator. This was a milestone event that has received praise from pretty much all over the world, and it was the key to our next step, which is to then send the video record of that to the entire House and Senate. And that has been done. In addition, we launched a social media campaign to help ensure that this video record was looked at by staffs working in these offices. There's about 10,000 staffers that work on the Hill for the 541 offices that represent the House and Senate. And that is going well as well. That started around November 5th, and to date, I think we're over about 700,000 messages through Twitter and Facebook, hashtag disclosure, which we know about. That does include messages sent to the House that did not include the hashtag. And it also doesn't include emails, because we also are working the email form pages of the
members.
That's
fantastic.
And so that is going well, well over 700,000, probably hit 1 million by early next year. And those three, that social media campaign is being run from three locations. One is disclosure.media. That's a domain, disclosure.media. The other is factsonwashington.org, F-A-X, facts. On Washington.org, and then the Facebook page, the Disclosure Lobby. So that social media campaign will continue certainly through the end of this month into January. And without question, we think the message has gotten to the Hill that this video record is there, this DVD set is there, and you need to be looking at it. Also, a number of people have been calling there to senators and their representative in the House, asking them to look at this material, to review it, to meet with me. Also, the video record, the DVD set of the Congressional Hearing Initiatives was accompanied by a letter signed by the witnesses at the citizen hearing.
And amazing witnesses they were. Jeez.
Yeah. It's probably the largest concentration of researchers and witnesses ever brought together. And believe me, it could have been twice as big. But there are limits. But it was certainly adequate. And that letter is calling again on the members to look at this material, to meet with me next year, and to hold hearings on this issue. So, what is the most comprehensive effort to date to get hearings on this issue on Capitol Hill is well underway. The last time that Congress held a hearing on this was 1968, believe it or not, in spite of everything that's happened since then. It was a one-day event. It was legitimate. There were, important information was provided. There were three or four witnesses that spoke, including... including Sagan. But it really, it had no intent, there was no intention of it going anywhere. It was actually part of an effort in 68, 69 to try to close the issue down in the public's mind and get out from under it. Because in 47 and 68, a lot of pressure had been building up on the government.
That's right.
Regarding this phenomenon, which the government obviously still had refused to confirm or acknowledge. And so they held the hearing, say they'd done that. They conducted this basically front program called the Condon Report, Condon Study. They announced that. They said there was nothing there. They used the basis of that to shut down Project Blue Book, which is the official Air Force study. They shut that down.
Right.
And they were well on the way at 68, 69 of destroying NICAP, which was the most formidable organization in the world addressing this issue with a lot of scientists. And then they were out from under it. And they thought, hey, we're free. We can pretty much operate without a problem. And they did for the next 10 years. The government sort of had a smoother time. But then that changed in 1978 when they had the momentous meeting between legendary researcher Stan Friedman and Jesse Marcel Sr., who had made the decision by 78 that he was dying, that he was no longer concerned and wanted to come forward and speak about this issue, about what had happened at Roswell. And he did, and that launched Roswell back into the forefront of the American people's attention. And, of course, the ET sightings continued, and so from 78 on, the game was afoot. But that was, my Lord, 46 years ago.
Hard to believe it's that long, Stephen. Hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. It's amazing. Well, it's been 67 years. It's one lifetime, essentially.
Yeah, it is.
The Roswell event.
It is. Now, the former congressional members who were on your panel during the disclosure hearings that you that you videotaped, have they tried to help you with the actual members of Congress in terms of saying, look at this video, you've got to see this, we need hearings? Are they active? Are they proactive for you?
They are. I am going to try to bring them into play. They were never brought, they were not brought into this. Remember, they're retired. Right, they're retired.
But they know people.
They do. But again, it's kind of a tough situation for them. They were brought in to conduct those hearings. They did a fantastic job. But it was not my intention that they would then be the point of the spear. I wanted them to do that job, and then we were going to do our job. Now, I am hoping that I can bring them back into play fairly soon, if they are open to it. And I believe that most of them are. And that is going to be in the form of dealing with the congressional hearing or chairpersons. See, in order to get hearings on the Hill, you have to convince one of the chairpersons of one of the committees that are appropriate, and there's about seven total.
That this would fit into, okay.
Yeah. And that chairperson is critical. They have to agree they're going to hold these hearings. So you start with the members of the committee, which is where we're going to be going next month. There are about 180 members of the seven committees that we're interested in. In other words, of the 441 offices and members on the Hill, about 180 are on sit on the seven committees. A few of them sit on more than one, sit on two. So you go there, you're going to meet with some lower-end staff, you get the ball rolling, and then hopefully you'll step up and meet with the chief of staff or the staff liaison between the member's office and the committee the member sits on. And then when you get enough people on that committee that you've got their attention, you're talking with them, and then they will approach the chairperson. So with that in mind, as part of where we're going, at some point, I'm going to send a letter. We sent a letter to all of the members signed by the witnesses. Sometime in late January, I think we're going to send a letter to just the seven committee chairs. Now, by the late January, we'll know who they are. Because, as you know, the Congress is going through a transition. There's going to be a shift to the Republican control in the Senate, which means that all of the committees will be Republican chaired come January. It'll take some time for certain slots to be filled up, but certainly the end of January, that'll be settled. We'll send a letter. Now, I'm going to be talking with the six committee members of the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure. These retired members. And a number of other political people, people that served in politics. And I'm going to try to get a letter. I'm going to put a letter together signed by as many political persons as possible, just to those seven members.
Well, that's smart.
The chair members.
When they want a witness to come in, Stephen, before Congress, and let's say the person lives in Michigan, do they pay for him to come in, or does that person have to come in on his own expense if he's asked to testify before Congress?
I'm researching that. It's, you know, there are many, many hearings that are held for different reasons. And in some cases, these hearings are done to address an issue that people want to look at. They've made their case. In some cases, the witnesses simply, they come voluntarily. They want to be there. And you have cases where they're subpoenaed. And so I'm doing some research to find out how that will work out. It is purely a secondary concern. Be assured that if hearings are agreed to, whatever it takes to get witnesses in Washington will be done. If it requires outside funding, then I assure you we'll get it.
Would the witnesses be primarily the same that you used for your disclosure hearing?
Well, I would certainly imagine that a number of the witnesses at the citizen hearing would be part of the initial group. I just can't imagine otherwise. And it's good you brought that up, George, because that's one of the key reasons why we have a real shot here at finally getting these hearings that have been now held back for 46 years. And that is, the citizen hearing accomplished something that really they've probably never seen before. We took this incredibly controversial subject and we held a mock hearing. We filmed it and then we sent it to them. Now when they put that DVD, any of those DVDs, into a player and look at them, what they will see is they will see the witnesses, the kinds of witnesses that will testify. They'll see how they comport themselves. They'll see how they come across. Of course, they'll hear the testimony that they're making. They'll see former members of theirs, colleagues of theirs. I'm sure that many of the members on the Hill know and maybe had worked with one or more of the six committee members that we had in 2013. They'll see them. They'll see how they handle the testimony. They'll see how their questions go. They will see the audience comporting themselves, being very favorable. In other words, we show them exactly pretty much what it would be like if they held these hearings, which is to say that we've stripped most of the risk out of the decision.
It's a template. It really
exactly.
is.
And so, you know, that is one of the reasons why we have a chance here, because we're giving them clear evidence that, look, if you do this, there is huge upside and very little downside. And, of course, I'll be making this case to them in private meetings that the Congress has an opportunity here to turn its situation around. As you know, and you've followed this for years, as probably as well as anybody, and had many guests that have come on and talked about this, the U.S. Congress, along with the United States, is going through a very difficult time. You know, we have our ups and we have our downs. This is a big down. The Congress is in a terrible place. It has terrible approval ratings. It's the butt of jokes, not only in the United States, but elsewhere. It can get nothing done. It is a huge mess. Obviously, it doesn't serve the country for it to stay in that place. It needs to get out of that hole and start becoming a productive, you know, member of our country and the three branches of government. This is an opportunity to do that. By holding these hearings, They will get worldwide attention. They will be joined up with probably the most important truth advocacy in the world today. They're going to get tremendous positive response after some of the initial skittishness is passed, and it's going to go a long ways to bringing the Congress into a place where it can start moving forward again. And one of the reasons that's more possible. Is because the issues being presented to them is clearly nonpartisan. It does not, in any obvious way, connect itself to one party or the other. It's not steeped in some of the huge disagreements that exist on the Hill right now. It transcends them all. And so that means that they can approach the issue without, how would you say, exposing their political flanks. The obviously, committees are nonpartisan events. There's members of both of the two major parties always in attendance in proportion to the amount of control they have in the House and Senate. So that is the message I'm going to be giving to them, that they have a chance to take an historical legacy here, which is extremely significant. Now, ultimately, the ultimate legacy will reside with the president that discloses and understands right. that that is the ultimate goal here.
And pushes for it. That's absolutely. Exactly right. I mean, can you imagine people like Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, so many other people who have, you know, witnessed UFOs by military bases and missile silos, testifying before Congress, people who know Washington and know Washington well, those senators and Congress people are going to go crazy.
It will be the most, I think, if these hearings are held, and I mean proper hearings, not two or three people coming up for half a day. I'm talking about 20, 30 witnesses or more testifying over a number of days, all day. They will probably be the most followed, most intensely scrutinized hearings in history, rivaling anything in the past, including the MacArthur hearings. And again, what separates this from all other events and projects that have been pursuing the disclosure goal for so long is that, unlike any press conferences that have been held in the past, I've held many of them. Some of my colleagues have held them. We've held some of these. Many of these have been the National Press Club, where these witnesses will come in and they'll address the press for an hour or so. They'll try to take questions. And then there's some attention, then it fades away. Unlike the documentaries that have appeared, which have been shown all over cable television for years, what makes this unique or important is that in this instance, the witnesses selected for their gravitas, their rank and station, and of course for the relevance and power of their testimony, are going to be up on the Hill in a hearing where they are testifying to members of Congress under oath. And by oath, I mean oath at risk of penalty, felony, perjury charges. And that is a game changer, because when the media sees people like the Air Force officers, and there are many now that can testify to the nuclear weapons tampering that has occurred on many occasions, testifying on the Hill with their hand in the air under oath of perjury.
Under oath, you're right.
That is the game changer, and I believe at that point the media takes the leash off that has constricted them, held them back from going beyond a certain point for decades now. They take the leash off and they bite into this issue. And when that happens, I believe the White House and the Pentagon are pretty much in a position where they have to cut a deal and get disclosure done. That is the strategy underway. It's moving forward nicely. And of course, I'm excited about next year.
You will not let this go. You may be one of the most passionate people I've known for 17 years. Why do you keep going, Stephen?
An advocate by nature pursues issues that you feel are important, but it's pretty much always the case that it's important not only to you but to a lot of other people. In some cases, to the society that you live in, and for whatever reason, certain people are drawn to advocacy. We know about such people; we've seen them throughout the 20th century. And I can tell you from experience, George, when you get into something like this, for whatever reason you have personally for doing it, as you get into it and the years go by, you become increasingly attached to the desires, hopes, aspirations of your fellow citizens that are attached to that issue. And at some point you really feel, and you probably are, representing those desires and aspirations, and so you acquire an obligation. It's unlike, I think, anything that you might run into if you're just in the business world where you've bought.
Well, I'm glad you keep pounding away. Stephen, we'll come back, talk more, because I understand there's a disclosure petition drive soon to launch, and then we'll get your take on some other issues next.
Well, a group of Christmas carolers walking all over the neighborhood singing songs, and it just reminded me of the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. Still available to you, still helping veterans charities as well, where everybody on that CD donated their times, voices, and energies for this project. And you can simply pick it up and keep it, give it away as a gift. It's ageless. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, look at the Holiday Magic CD picture in the highlight reel, click more, takes you to amazon.com. You can order it, and they'll send it right to you. The Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. Welcome back to Coast, Stephen Bassett with us. We'll take calls with Stephen next hour. Stephen, update us then on this disclosure petition drive, which is about ready to launch.
Yes, indeed. We've kind of come full circle here. This whole strategy began 3 years ago in September of 2011 when PRG submitted a disclosure petition to the White House called Disclosure Petition 1. And this was simple. It called for the President of the United States to disclose the ET presence to the American people. All of this you can find on the website disclosurepetition.org, disclosurepetition.org. This petition received sufficient signatures to get a response from the White House, which came on October the 4th, in which the White House stated there was no evidence for any of this and no evidence that the government had hidden anything from the American people. There's very few people in the country that believe that, and they shouldn't because it's not true. But, and most importantly, it was the first time in history that the White House had put its position on the ET issue in writing, which is very important if you're an advocate and if you're dealing with the media. So we got that done, and that petition and the response to it still is on the White House website to this day, over 3 years later. So you can find it. Go to disclosurepetition.org, and you can get the links, link over to the White House website and see it. We conducted four more petitions after that, none of which got enough signatures to receive a White House response. The threshold is now 100,000 signatures in 30 days. But as part of this current initiative, we will submit the sixth disclosure petition on January the 7th. And this petition is congressional hearings. It's calling for the president to support the convening of congressional hearings as soon as possible for the witnesses ready to testify. Now, I've put out a press release on this. We've tossed it into social media approximately 3 weeks ahead of time to give people a chance to go to the White House, a We the People project, and register, which you have to do if you haven't already, so that when January the 7th comes, it can be easy to just go there and sign the petition in a few seconds. So, and also to spread the word, share links, what have you, that this is coming. Because we only have 30 days. Now, the petition is going to remain on the White House website for those 30 days, minimum to February the 6th, right in the heart of course, the Congressional Hearing Initiative, which is intentional. If it does happen to generate a lot of signatures, that will attract some media attention. I can use that. If we should get to 100,000 signatures, which is no easy feat, let me tell you, though obviously, George, you have an audience many times that size. So if your audience were to get behind this, we could certainly generate those 100,000 signatures. But if we did, then that would trigger not only more press, but would, of course, require a response from the White House. So this is just one aspect of the project underway, and that petition will go up at We the People and the White House website on January the 7th, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm optimistic we'll get a decent number of signatures.
That'll be good. That'll be exciting indeed. Now, let's talk about, Stephen, in your opinion, because we talk so much about the political ramifications of this and the effort. What do you think, in terms of the UFO disclosure itself, what do you think is going on? How long has it been going on? I mean, do you agree with the theories of the late Zechariah Sitchin, for example, that, you know, beings came here and genetically altered us? I mean, where do you stand with all this?
Well, I have opinions about the entire spectrum of evidence and theories and assertions that have developed, and they're huge. It's a huge spectrum. I tend to focus on those areas that are most applicable to the advocacy process. You know, it isn't necessary to shove the entire elephant through the door. You just need to get the trunk through, I guess you could say. But I'm aware of these theories. I have a very strong sense that there is a longstanding connection between humans and the planet in general and extraterrestrials, some of which are here now and some of which have been here perhaps in the past and long gone. And that very likely includes genetic connection. The vast number of reports, which is exceeding a million, that have been submitted to the researchers since the late 1970s, early 1980s, and over a million written accounts from what we call contactees who are engaged by these ETs covertly. I mean, it's not an open thing. This body of evidence is substantial and very telling if you review a significant portion of it, and it clearly indicates that there was a huge amount of genetic activity, genetic activity, whether it's research or whether it's work, remains to be seen. But this is one of the key focuses of this ET presence, which is a huge story in and of itself. And so it's very likely there is a genetic involvement. And we've talked about this on your show before. When you go down that road, I don't think we have time tonight, you do arrive at some extraordinary conclusions or possibilities that will be profound. Impacting in the post-disclosure world.
Since you've been doing this, I've noticed an uptick in interest in UFOs from all kinds of people. I don't know if that's coincidental because I don't believe in coincidence, but something's happening out there. Do you? And I'm sure you sense it too.
Oh, yeah, a great deal is happening. I mean, this is a movement. It's global. We have obviously increased the total awareness of the issue beyond just the idea of UFOs. As I say, it's no longer really about lights in the sky. It's about the lives on the ground, and it's not really about UFOs anymore. It's about extraterrestrial craft. I mean, I don't deal in unidentified flying objects. I deal in ET craft and the ETs that are in them, and the fact that needs to be acknowledged by the world's governments. We've altered the language. We've introduced terms like exopolitics, like disclosure. There's a language developing around the contactee phenomenon and so forth that is becoming more and more known. There have been thousands of articles written about this subject in just the last 10 years, going back to 2000, I mean thousands and thousands, around the world, which some people are surprised to hear, because overall the media has serviced the truth embargo, has gone along with it, but it's not incongruent. The press has written about this subject, English language press around the world thousands of times, but they only go so far. The press is like a dog on a leash in the front yard. The dog can go anywhere that leash will allow it to go, but when we reach the end of that leash, that's as far as it goes. And the press has been on a leash, in some respects a self-imposed leash. They go so far, and that's it. They do not ask questions of leaders. They do not ask questions of politicians. They do not engage it at the investigatory level. They simply scribe it. They write it down. Nevertheless, these thousands of articles are accumulating in the public consciousness, and since, obviously, the late 1990s, most of these articles are archived. They don't go away. So that is a significant change. And, of course, one of the most important changes since 2000 is that quite a few countries have been taking unilateral action on this. They have not ended the truth embargo, obviously, but 15 or so have released, without pressure, thousands upon thousands of documents to the public domain from their files, not documents that would explode the issue, but certainly related documents. Call them UFO files, call them ET files. And this is a message to the United States in one form or another that these countries are no longer fully on board with this policy of embargo. And that is a major change. There's been a lot of changes. There's a lot of pressure. Right now, the President of the United States and the Pentagon, these are the two key players here, ultimately, that makes this decision, are having to maintain the truth embargo on four or five fronts. On one side, you've got these other nations like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, France, Uruguay, Brazil, Norway, Denmark, releasing these files. The Catholic Church and repeatedly endorsing this idea of extraterrestrials in order to mitigate concerns on the part of the Catholic faith. That's over a billion people. So you have that on one side. On another side, you have the media writing more and more articles about the subject. And this includes, of course, documentaries, of which there are now hundreds of them, and they are on television all the time. Most of them are credible, decent, and constructive. On another front, you've got the activist movement, which is continuing to move forward. It is. It has a strategy. It's getting more funding. And, of course, it's maneuvering to try to make disclosure happen. On another side, they've got the contactees. The contactees are now coming out of the closet. They're coming forward. Some of them are known. Some of them are musicians. There's going to be more of that, and there's going to be higher-level people who are going to finally feel that they can speak on the subject, and that is going to be highly publicized, and they're going to have to deal with that. And then on another side, another front, they are, of course, dealing with the extraterrestrials. The extraterrestrials still come and go as they please. They are seen all the time. They continue to lay down crop circles or agroglyphs in UK fields year after year after year. So the truth embargo is essentially being confronted from all of these directions. And the message that I'll be conveying to the staff on the Hill, and that I've been conveying through media for years to the White House and to the Pentagon, I guess you could say, both, is that this whole thing's coming apart, that you cannot maintain an embargo with pressure coming in from five different directions at the same time. It's going to shred. It's going to come apart. And you have got to get ahead of this issue. Now, it's notable, George, that, and I'm amused by the synchronicity, mm-hmm. that just within the last 2 days, one of the most notorious and well-known embargoes in history, certainly in modern times, has just been addressed, and that the United States, through President Obama's unilateral action, has moved to begin the ending of the Cuba embargo.
Yep, amazing story.
53 years on. Well, my message to the Hill is, okay, that's one embargo down, one to go.
I think it's going to happen eventually. I mean, we've talked about this for years, but you're getting closer. I feel something.
Mm. You know, we're all feeling a lot of things, George, right now. This is very interesting times. I lived through, and I was a young man during the 60s and the 70s, when things were a mess, crazy, paranoid, very disturbing, ugly. A lot of people who are uncomfortable right now, or young, don't recall that, but we've been through times like this before, though this, I think, is special in some ways. But your legendary predecessor, Art Bell, had a concept that he liked to talk about a lot. It was called the quickening.
Yeah.
He brought it up. And, of course, it's kind of a subtle concept, and some people get it, some don't. But of late, I'm really feeling that, this idea of a quickening. And what is that? Everyone has his own interpretation, but my interpretation is this, that we have entered, since World War II, an era where we're seeing increasing what I call systemic dysfunction, where a whole broad range of systems are breaking down, their ability to deal with whatever they're supposed to deal with not happening. Problems are emerging out of that, and the problems are increasing, and you're seeing multiple symptomology, and this is happening faster and faster. So that's kind of my idea of the quickening, and boy, in the last 10 years, we have really been hit with one thing after another, after another, after another, which reflects the systemic breakdown. And it's definitely getting people's attention, and they're worried. They think, where in the hell is all this going to go? Where are we going to be in 20 years? And, of course, this is important if you've got kids, you have family. This is a legitimate idea, and I don't like where it's going. And barring some dramatic reversals, the 21st century could go extremely badly, which is why the disclosure issue is so powerful right now, why it's so important in my view. This disclosure event has the power to alter almost all of the equations that are in play right now, and to trigger what I would call a systemic reform process, which would reverse the events we're seeing that we would call the quickening, and start moving us back towards constructive and positive government, and altering the attitudes of people, not only about their government, about the planet and things like that. They could really turn things around, and I think it's absolutely essential. There's nothing else out there that I think has the power to do this. Nothing. This is a big planet now. We got 7 billion people, 200 countries. We got problems stacked on problems to the roof. It's going to take something huge to rejuggle the equations, wipe the etch a sketch out and start it over again. Disclosure event certainly has that power, which is one of the reasons that I have the passion that I do, and any advocate would. I mean, what's at stake here is so huge that once you get into it, you can't stop. You can't just say, well, enough of this. You really have to lock yourself in for the duration.
Might there be, as Jim Mars would say, an alien agenda that is so frightening, Stephen, that governments just don't want us to know what's going on?
That's always been speculated. Occasionally you'll see in some articles about that. Somebody will come forward with claiming to have information. It's always been there. 18 years in now, I have not been persuaded by anything that I've seen so far. That, in fact, that is central to this. There is an extraterrestrial agenda, obviously. They just didn't happen to show up accidentally and hang around all this time. They're here for their own reasons. And we're at a disadvantage in understanding those reasons because obviously the government has done everything it could to prevent a proper engagement of this issue, sorting out of the information, and so forth. So we're connecting what dots we have, but the government's holding a lot of the dots in secrecy. So you have to interpolate. You have to read between the lines. I can say that I do not see at the core of this a truly nefarious extraterrestrial agenda that somehow the government knows about and must sequester the issue, must embargo it, so that we can all at least be comfortable in our final days. I don't see that, but let me make an emphatic point that even if there was such an agenda, whatever it was, under what I would call natural law, which is a concept about certain things which transcend any construct that humans can put together in their law books, under natural law, it is simply not acceptable for the world's people not to be given this information. Whatever it is we're facing, we need to face it as a 7 billion strong species and deal with it in whatever fashion we can or want to, and not have the whole thing be simply the private preserve of a limited number of people who somehow feel that they should shoulder that burden. That we can't have chaos, we can't have upset. We'll shoulder this burden. We'll keep it to ourselves. And then one day things will all just go to hell. But you'll at least have had a comfortable life. That is no longer acceptable. And if there's anybody in government who wants to debate that, I'd be happy to debate it. But of course they can't debate it because that would let the cat out of the bag. And so they basically self-ascribe to themselves this power to control our destiny, to leave us completely in the dark. While they deal with it or don't, and that assumes that whatever the issue is, that they already know what can happen or not happen.
And well, will you keep following up on it, Stephen? We're going to be back with phone calls next with Stephen Bassett.